and welcome to minute 33 of season 12 of Movie Ramen at the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back once again, David.
Hello. Yes, I am back.
Yeah. Minute 33 begins with Andy continuing to fight and ends with Red giving his honest opinion. We ended things yesterday with Andy being cornered by Pete Rooster and Boggs in the supply room. And they managed basically at the end of yesterday's episode to hold Andy down. And Andy just keeps fighting. He's trying as hard as he can to get out of danger. And he doesn't give up. He keeps fighting. And we see that Rooster and Pooter and Pete are still holding onto Andy's arms to try and keep him from getting away. And then they do something really weird. They like throw him in the ground and they all start kicking him. They're trying to subdue him, I guess you can say. But it's sort of weird. Again, we're not going to get into all the intricacies of the whole idea of what goes on in prisons and stuff like that. But I'm just looking at it from the perspective that, Bog said yesterday that he likes it that Andy wants to fight. But so if he likes it when Andy wants to fight, then why beat him into submission so that he won't be able to fight back? Like I'm trying to figure out the dichotomy of that whole idea. But whatever. It's also hard to get into a psychopath's mind to try and understand what he's doing and why.
Unless he's just being nice, because he does have a sudden kind of burst of kind of wildness, doesn't he, Andy, at the start of this scene. So I don't know if maybe he's just thrashing a bit too wildly for what he wants to do to him, maybe. And he's I don't know.
No, it is possible, obviously.
Yeah, because he starts to get really crazy, just like wailing around all over the place.
Yeah, but again, because he's trying to save himself as much as he can.
Oh yeah, rightfully so. But yeah, I'm just wondering why it might. As I say, it does seem a sudden shift, which might just explain why they start chucking him on the floor and stuff. Yeah,
maybe it's just the idea to kick him down and subdue him a little bit. It's not like they want to have him become unconscious.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Maybe it's just to tire him down a little bit or something. Maybe that's part of the idea here of what they're doing. And again, they keep kicking him, and as they're kicking him, we get Red's narration. Which I think is a great way to do this, because what they're basically they're letting us see more or less what's going on, but Darabont is also trying to distract us from what's going on to Andy.
Well, I mean that's interesting. I mean, what I was going to talk about in this scene is actually that shot, because I like the point there, because there's an interesting choice of camera, because when they get him on the ground and start kicking him, the camera slowly moves away. It drifts away from the scene. Mm-hmm. And it can be interesting to think about different reasons why. I mean, for me, I kind of had a couple of kind of ideas. I mean, for one, it might just be showing how other prisoners and guards would just look the other way and keep it happening. And it's just we're almost like them. Or it could be just a delicate way to show that the attack is continuing, but we're not going to watch it sort of thing. So I don't know. I mean, what was your take on why you think they move away like that? The way the camera drifts off and leaves them to it.
Because they're showing us that Andy is not going to win this fight.
Yeah.
And because Andy is one of them, it is the person the story is being told about. So we don't need to see him in this type of desperate situation. The idea is, it's inevitable. This is what's happening. Andy's not going to be able to save himself. So we're just going to, we don't have to look.
Yeah, but it could just cut, couldn't it? It could have just cut away. But I think, I do think having it move away, actually, it does put the audience in kind of those eyes, as it were, the eyes of the camera, really. It's just an interesting way, because, as I say, it could just easily cut.
Right, but I think it's also trying to show us how there's no one around.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that for whatever reason, whether they found on purpose a deserted area, or it was known that, okay, you know, if the sisters are there and they're going after their prey, nobody wants to be around.
Yeah, that's true. No, there's no one to help him, sort of thing. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Right. There's no one to help him, but there's also, because everyone's afraid that they don't want to become a target of the sisters at the same time.
Mm.
Yeah. That's what I would think.
Yeah.
Red begins his narration, and he goes, "I wish I could tell you that Andy fought the good fight. And the sisters let him be. I wish I can tell you that. But prison is no fairy tale world." And then he says, he never said who did it, but we all knew. And then the shot changes, and we see the cells. We hear the buzzer of the gates at the same time. We see the guards, you know, come in, some of them walking up to the second tier. And I really like the way that they basically choreograph the movement of these guards as they're walking through the tiers.
Yeah. And the camera as well. Yeah. I love the camera shot as well. It's very low angle, which it helps you see the other levels. It shows you how high it is. But it also, low angles make the figures that are close to the camera look massive. So it makes the guards look bigger, more powerful in this space. Yeah, and you get that nice little movement, and the movement is kind of following with the guards. It's very structured.
Right.
Yeah, it really gives a sense of space, sense of life there, really, just through that camera shot. You might have already talked about this before. As I say, I always like looking at the extra features, but I don't know if this has been brought up before, but I found it interesting, a bit of an anecdote about Morgan Freeman's voiceover, but I don't know if you've already talked about it. But I think reportedly, they realized on set that they wanted the voiceover for timing and things. So they grabbed Morgan Freeman. I can't remember exactly where they went. I've lost the note on it. But they basically just went to some random kind of, I don't know why they couldn't have used their proper sound recorder, but they just randomly recorded it, the whole voiceover, in just 40 minutes, just so they had it for timing. But when they came to edit the film, they wanted to keep it because they thought it was perfect, because Morgan Freeman nailed it in 40 minutes. But the technical quality was terrible. Like, there was background sound. It was the equipment wasn't right, and the technical quality meant they couldn't do it. So they had to record it again. But whereas the original took 40 minutes to record, it took them 3 weeks to record in the actual studio doing it properly. Which is just mad. But couldn't capture quite that same. Well, I guess you could argue that when they knew they had more time, they improved it. But yeah, I think as well, being an editor as well, I think also what would have happened is, when you're so used to hearing because as I say, they edited it first with the 40 minute rough one. When you're used to hearing it one way, in your head, you kind of want to recapture that, and you can't recapture it. It's always going to be different. So I guess that's why it must have taken so long. Darabont or whoever edited it would have just been painstakingly like, "Oh, I just want it just like that last that one we had before." I mean, there might be other reasons, but I found that.
No, I think it's great. I mean, we all know that Morgan Freeman narrates a lot ever since this movie came out. You know, so he was still just perfecting the art at the time, I guess. But it works.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's great the way that the narration goes. And again, they edited it in perfectly because of everything that's going on, you know, when he's always talking. So, you know, he continues talking here, and he goes, "Things went on like that for a while. Prison life consists of routine." And, you know, as he's saying that, that's when you see the guards are, are counting. Because again, this is routine. And then we get a shot of Andy outside. We see that there's snow falling. We see that he's got bruises all over his face. And then we hear Red say again, and then more routine. Every so often, Andy would show up with fresh bruises. And we see Andy in another shot. You know, this is sort of a montage of things going on with Andy. But we get to see that he's trying to fight them off with a mop. Which is interesting weapon of choice.
Oh, isn't it a rake?
Is that a rake?
Which is pretty brutal, to be fair. Isn't it a rake? I might be wrong. I thought I saw his. It looks. Yeah, it's a rake. That's pretty brutal.
I'm trying to think.
Oh, unless it's. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure I saw the barbs on there.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It is a rake. Oh wow. Okay. So yeah, that isn't a mop.
Yeah, I'm surprised to have easy access to a rake. It's gonna be pretty brutal, but I guess they do gardening.
I mean, he does have a rock hammer. So. Yeah, why not use a rake also?
Oh yeah. Well, I also want to mention in this montage is the first time the music really kicks in not in the whole film, but in our weeks. So I had to mention that really. The score's really beautiful. Isn't it? Thomas Newman, isn't it? Thomas Newman. And it really captures the film, really. It kind of bounces, because there's that unusual mix, like we say, it's a bit of a roller coaster, but it captures the melancholy and also the kind of slow. It's quite a slow score, especially like in moments like this. It captures that long kind of slow, relentless kind of plot of life in prison, but there's a splash of hope just in those strings and the beauty of those strings. I think it also kind of mirrors Andy's quite an unusual character. It kind of captures his slow, thoughtful kind of way and demeanor. I do love the music in the film, and this is a nice moment for it, really. A montage is always a good place for the music to shine, although we've got Morgan Freeman over the top as well, but you can still hear the strings going on.
Right. And as Andy is fighting them off, so Red continues by saying the sisters kept at him. Sometimes he was able to fight them off, sometimes not. And then the shot changes, and we see Andy just working in the laundry, doing the regular work that he needs to do. But you also see that what I find really amazing about this shot of Andy is you see Andy's a loner because he's all by himself. Mm. He doesn't have friends.
Well, and not only that, I mean, the way they've lit him, he's backlit, so he's almost just a silhouette. He's just like a shadow among everyone else as well. It's again using, as I say, it's just a masterfully kind of made, this film, this shot and directed. It's just it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Red continues and says, and that's how it went for Andy. That was his routine. I do believe those first 2 years were the worst for him. So, I mean, it's very interesting, because when you're watching this for the first time, you don't know how long this story will be going on for them. You know, you don't know it's going to be 19 years. You don't know the friendship is between them. I mean, again, this is something that I've brought up with other guests. And who do you think is the main character in this movie?
It's exactly. They talk about that in some of the special features, because especially once Andy, because the end of the film, Andy disappears. I mean, he leaves the prison, so you are actually left with Red. So you could easily argue it's Red's film. Although you start without him, I guess, briefly, but only really very briefly. So it is, I guess, in a way, Red is the lead. He's just kind of the story is just kind of well I guess it's really about both of them, I guess. It's about their relationship, but I don't know, I do feel maybe Red is the Red's almost the one who gets redeemed at the end, because he's the one. It's Andy's actions change Red. They give him hope, but they stop him from being like Brooks and giving up when he gets out. So you could argue that the main arc is Red's. Yeah, because we don't even see all of a lot of Andy's story. We don't see until a flashback later and things. So I wouldn't be against.
Right. Okay, that's my opinion. I've said it numerous times that I think Red is the character here, and he's telling the story of this guy Andy Dufresne, who he met and became friends with. That's what I believe is going on here.
Yeah.
You know, Andy is obviously a big part of the story, because the story is about Andy, about Andy's redemption. But Andy's redemption, Andy's physical redemption, led to Red's, I guess, mental redemption.
And a lot of people have read the film as Red Andy as being like a Christ-like figure, haven't they? Of him kind of sacrificing it. Although he gets away at the end, but I guess he could. That's almost the rebirth. It's almost the rebirth. You could argue. That's what some people have argued. I mean, I won't totally go there myself. But a lot of people have seen it that way, really.
Okay, I can see that too.
Yeah.
I can see that too. And as Red basically tells us that, you know, he's convinced that these 2 years were the hardest for Andy. That's where this particular minute ends. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this?
I know. I think I've already jumped in with the things I wanted to talk about, really, in that one.
Right. Again, looking back at that final scene in this minute of seeing Andy, as you said, silhouetted, but also completely on his own. You know, it's so hard to even imagine being this lonesome for 2 years, where you're in a prison it doesn't matter where you are, where you don't have friends, you don't have people to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So it's I think it's very effective the way that they show that to us. Okay, so today's segment is called Midweek Morgan, where my guest will give their top five Morgan Freeman performances. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up.
My number five, I've not seen it for a long, long, long time, but I can always remember thinking it's a bit of an underrated gem. And I can remember enjoying Morgan Freeman's performance in it, and that's Nurse Betty. A very black comedy Morgan Freeman's not necessarily the lead. The lead is Renée
Zellweger.
Renée Zellweger. That was kind of her. It was kind of her breakthrough, I think, in terms of critical response. I can remember it being the critics quite enjoyed it. It never made a lot of money, and it's kind of become forgotten since. But I can remember enjoying it a lot, and Morgan Freeman has quite a lot of fun in the role. So I wanted to stick that in there, even though it's been way too long since I've seen it, so I don't know any details. And the next I'm going to go with Million Dollar Baby. I think I've discovered over the years, not everyone's a massive fan. I think some people find it a bit Oscar baity and things, but a bit of a weepy. But it works like gangbusters for me. It really gets emotionally devastating. I do like Clint Eastwood's films behind the camera, as well as in front of the camera, really. But he's a great director. And then number three, I'm going to go with Seven. Again, an amazing film, and Morgan Freeman has he's kind of a bit of the anchor of the film. He's quite often gets this kind of thing. He gets the less showy performance, but he's just solid and dependable, and yeah, he's fantastic in it. Then number two, I'm going to go with Unforgiven, another kind of favourite of mine. I adore this film. And again, Morgan Freeman's perhaps not the lead, but he has a very important role, and he does a superb job as always. And then number one's Shawshank, because it's Shawshank. We've talked about it already. Obviously, you've talked about it a lot. But it's brilliant. And he's superb in it. It's quite a subtle performance, but I couldn't imagine anyone else doing as good a job,
Right.
really.
I mean, I'm assuming since you've seen the behind the scenes things, you know that Red is supposed to be a red-headed
Yeah,
Irishman.
an Irish like
That's right.
white
And
guy,
they wanted to give it to Robert Redford,
yeah.
which I think would have been a very interesting choice. I don't know if it would have been better than
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman, but it would have been a very
No,
good choice regardless.
it could have been interesting. As I say, other people could have done it, but not in the same way. It's hard to think of someone else doing it now. But yeah, Robert Redford might have given it a good go, but it would have been a
Correct.
very
I
different film.
think with Robert Redford, the problem is that if you look at the character of Red, it works better that he's I guess not, he doesn't look like he's coming from the from an upper class family type of thing. And if Robert Redford would have played the role,
No.
he wouldn't have been as
Yeah, he's got a bit too kind of that
right, I'm not
classically
even talking about
handsome
handsome.
kind
I'm just
of
talking about
thing going on.
the look of someone who is who probably came from money, that type of thing. I mean, I think that's where my mind is thinking from that perspective. All right. So now we will play the first of two games. We're going to start today with high low. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get today. So the first one that you're going to get is the 1951 film An American in Paris.
I'm gonna go, I think this will be pretty high. I'm gonna go IMDb 7.8 and Rotten Tomatoes. I'm gonna go 91.
No, you overshot this one. It's 7.1 and 83.
Really? 7.1, wow. I just thought that was I thought that'd be much higher.
Right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Okay, the 2018 film Black Panther.
Black Panther. They tend to go quite high, some of these popular Marvel ones. I'm gonna go 7.9 IMDb, and I'm gonna go. It's got pretty good reviews. I think 90 Rotten Tomatoes.
High on one and low on the other. Which is why the game is called High Low.
Okay, interesting.
So on IMDb, it's a 7.3. Rotten
Okay.
Tomatoes, it's a 96%. Which I mean, I like Black Panther,
Black
but I think
Panther.
96 is a little, it's overreaching. I would be closer to the 90 that you said. That's what I would think. All right, let's spin the wheel for your third and final one. Okay, the Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers from 2002.
Oh, this will be high. I'm gonna go with an 8 IMDb and a 90 Rotten Tomatoes.
Ah, you undershot both of those. Eight
Oh
point
wow,
seven
8.7.
and
Jeez.
95.
Wow.
And I mean, it's interesting. We haven't gotten yet to the other two Lord of the Rings movies, but in my opinion, The Two Towers is the lesser of the three. Let's put it that way. It's a great movie.
I think it is. Yeah, I agree with you, but I tend to find a lot of people think it's the best. But But I don't know. I lean towards the first one, and I actually really like the third one. I think a lot of people say there's too many endings, but I mean, this is a debate for another time. But I think it sells. I mean, this is an epic film. You need an epic sort of. You need a lot of endings to tie it all up. So I mean, I love the whole trilogy.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
a massive Paul the Rose
I
guy,
completely agree with you.
but I agree that the second one is slightly. I think the thing for me, the second one is the only one that has a couple of scenes that make me cringe. Whereas the other films, they're just spot on.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
Anyway,
that's okay.
this is
Again,
just
I'm a
another
big
film.
fan of Lord of the Rings, and I will only watch the extended editions of both of them anyway. So, okay, so.
I'm waiting to show them my girls, but because I've only got the extended ones at home, and they're so long, it's finding the retirement
Okay,
is
now
crazy.
just so you know, it's very interesting. The Two Towers is the highest percentage on Rotten Tomatoes between the three, which
Wow.
is really interesting. I wouldn't have expected that. They're all in the 90s, but Lord of the Two Towers, anyone listening that will be on later and you get them, you might, I'm giving you hints. Yeah, but 95 is the highest, but on IMDb, it's the lowest of the three. That's the thing.
Interesting.
Very interesting. All right, so let's spin the wheel one more time for the other game. Name that novel adaptation.
I'm bad at these. We'll see what I get out.
All right, this is a movie that came out in 2005, and the original title is The Small World of Silas Timberman.
When was the film out? Sorry, I missed that.
2005.
Small world. I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. So.
It is directed by David
Ooh.
Cronenberg.
Trying to think. I'm terrible with years. Spider? No, that was later, wasn't it?
Okay, no, that was
Yeah.
2014. And it stars Aragorn, Viggo Mortensen, Maria
Oh,
Bello.
History of Violence.
Yes, very good, very nice. All right, so David, would you like to once again tell people where they can find David Brooke?
Yeah, you can find me at blueprintreview.co.uk.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to rob@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Busy.